the two things that have happened in our timetable of the Passover season. As Christ was crucified on the Feast of Passover, but he was buried on the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The scriptures are clear that they had to, that they normally left, when Romans crucified somebody, they normally left him hanging for days and days and days until until the birds of the air had eaten their bones. But in deference to the Jewish Sanhedrin and their Jewish law, they took Christ and two thieves off the cross. And as we remember that Christ's legs were, normally they ensured they were dead by breaking their legs so that they would, the pressure would go down in their lungs and they couldn't breathe out and they would suffocate. We know that Christ died from the description, the medical description, that he died not from that normal way of suffocating, but he died from a heart. It was the pressure on his heart, but it was, he died from a broken heart. And when the centurion put the spear into the fourth and fifth rib. Then blood and water came out. The water was the serum that was in the outer sac that had squeezed his heart so that it couldn't go anymore. And so then both blood and water came out, which according to the doctors that looked at it, they show that he died from a heart attack or a broken heart. And they had to get him off. They got him off of the... He and the two thieves. We don't know where the two thieves were buried, but we know that Christ was buried in the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, which was not too far from the site of Golgotha. And he had to be buried before sundown on this particular day, which was the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And we can go through the exact things, but he was in the grave for 3 days. But the critical issue on the second day that he was in the grave, he kept the Sabbath perfectly. It was the only time in history that the Sabbath has ever been kept without any offense. And so he fulfilled the Sabbath. He fulfilled Passover. Now on the third day, he fulfills the Feast of First Fruits. Now under the law, and I'll go through this in a minute, it's so, to me, fascinating when we know exactly what was going on in the temple while Christ was being crucified and when he rose from the dead. Let me go through that. In Leviticus 23, which lists all of the set times of God, verse 1, and the Lord said unto Moses, saying, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them concerning the feasts of the Lord. Now the word feasts is a word in Hebrew which means the set times. And from a spiritual standpoint, these set times of the Lord are the only set times. I mean, we invent all kinds of set times. We invent our birthdays and we celebrate New Year's and Christmas and 4th of July, and we think all of these are set times or holidays. But it's important if we want to know the mind of God that we know what His set times are. And His set times are listed specifically, and it says they're to be celebrated in perpetuity, that they're to be celebrated forever. So now we are at the set times of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work therein, as the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Now we know that Christ was not, he just didn't celebrate the Sabbath, he was the Sabbath, and he is the Sabbath of the Lord. In him you cease from your own labors. And again, there are 46 death penalties in the law for doing work, on any kind of work on the Sabbath. Come back, little Sheba. Are you back?
Yeah.
All right. The idea then, this is critical if you want to understand spiritual matters. The idea that there are 46 death penalties for violating the Sabbath. It doesn't matter what day you say they should be on. But, and I promise you, in the last week you've broken just about every one of them. And until you know, remember Paul said over and over and over to the people, I write unto you that know the law. If you don't know the law, then you just sort of blithely along thinking, well, okay, this is that's part of that old God guy that, no, God didn't change. And so he fulfilled the set time of the Sabbath. And he is the Sabbath. So that's the first thing he fulfilled. These are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their season. In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread unto the Lord. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread occurred the day after the celebration of Passover. And it too was a feast of the Lord, and you could not violate it. And they call the whole thing throughout the Scriptures the Passover season, or the Passover, or the Pascha, whatever it's called. I can never pronounce that stuff. And so being buried, he fulfilled the... And being unleavened, he fulfilled the Sabbath, he fulfilled Passover, and now he's fulfilled the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Does everybody understand that?
He was unleavened because he was
He was without sin, without hypocrisy, without seeing lack, without seeing want, without doubting the power of God. Those are the three types of hypocrisy, or three types of leaven. Now, if you hear modern preachers say, they say, well, leaven is sin. No, leaven isn't sin. Leaven is... Well, I don't go there. The 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread unto the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. In the first day you shall have a holy convocation. Now, that's why all of the arguments about... Remember, in order to understand this, you got to understand that the Jewish day started at sunset. So, if anybody's interested, I've got all kinds of charts and everything to show you exactly which is where and when is what. In the first day you shall have a holy convocation, you shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. And the seventh day is a holy convocation, you shall do no servile work therein. Now, this is the critical one. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When you be come into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And you shall offer that day when you wave the sheaf a he-lamb without blemish of the first year for a burnt offering unto the Lord. And the meat offering shall be 2/10 deals of fine flour mingled with oil, an offering made by fire unto the Lord for a sweet savor. And the drink offering thereof shall be wine, the fourth part of a hin. Now this is the critical issue, verse 14. And you shall eat neither bread nor parched corn nor green ears until the selfsame day that you've brought the offering unto God. It shall be a statute forever throughout all your generations in all of your dwellings. Now, the critical issue is you cannot eat the fruit or the food of the new land until the first fruit offering had been accepted. Their stores now were empty. They'd eaten all of the stuff from the previous year. Now the stores were empty, and you cannot eat of the new stuff from the land unless this first fruit offering is accepted. Now watch what happened. Watch what was going on. At the exact same time that Christ was being taken to the garden tomb, another procession took place. It was very close, very near. And this was the beginning of the first fruit offering. A noisy throng followed the delegates from the Sanhedrin. And they were within shouting distance of each other, from where he was being buried to where this noisy crowd was following the priest from the Sanhedrin. Outside the city and across the brook Kedron, they emerged in a field across Kedron which had been marked or set aside for this sole purpose. The law said, "You shall bring a sheaf, an omer, of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. He shall wave the omer before God to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." This Passover sheaf was to be accompanied by a burnt offering of a he-lamb without blemish. Until this was done, no fresh barley or other products of the earth could be sold or used in the land. The omer was reaped in public the day before it was offered. The crowd gathered around the elders, who took care that it was done exactly according to tradition. The spot where the first sheaf was to be reaped was marked by the Sanhedrin on the 14th by tying together the bundles of barley while it was still standing. This is exactly the same time on the 14th that Christ was being bound and scourged. The barley had to be grown in an ordinary field. It had to be in the land of Israel. It could not be in a garden or orchard. The soil could not be manured or fertilized in any way, and it could not be artificially watered. So if God didn't provide the means and the water, the barley or the offering would not, the first fruit offering would not grow. And this is why Christ could not leave the land, he had to be born in the land. And after his baptism, he could not leave the land. So he went through his ministry. Exactly the same time that he was being bound and scourged, this process, they bound the sheaves of wheat. Now this field was plowed in the autumn and sowed exactly 70 days before Passover. And just as the sun was going down, the three men, each with a sickle and a basket, set to work. And just as the sun was going down, Christ was being placed in that tomb. The first asked the bystanders these questions: "Has the sun gone down?" Because it was the beginning then of the right day. And everybody answered yes. "With this sickle?" Everybody answered yes. "Into this basket?" Everybody answered yes. "On this Sabbath?" Everybody answered yes. "Shall I reap?" And everybody answered yes. This is why the crowd had to call, "Crucify him." That's why you and I, if we were there, we would have yelled, "Crucify him." Because the Passover had to be done by the vote or by the cry of the people. Now, does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, that's the answer to the question the other
night. Who killed him?
Well, wasn't his mother wonderful?
Having all the questions answered yes, they cut down the sanctified barley. Then this, while Christ was in the grave going through all that he did, that we can't even begin to understand what happened to him. And it makes me fearful when I think of it, because I know that I deserve it. The stocks were then brought to the temple. They were thrashed and beaten with canes so as not to injure the grain. Then they were parched on a pan perforated with holes so that each grain was touched by the fire. Does it sound familiar? The seeds were then ground and then passed through 13 sieves, each closer to each other than the other, than the previous one. There was a 13-step process. The grain had to be sufficiently fine so that when the treasurer of the temple, when he put his hand into the flour now, that nothing would adhere to his hand. And I could give sermons forever about that. One omer, which is 5.1 pints, was then offered in the temple the morning of the 16th as the offering of the first fruit. Christ wasn't raised from the dead in the morning. He was raised from the dead immediately after the sun went down, immediately at the same time that the priests in the temple were waving the offering, the first fruit offering, before God. And so as that offering was being waved, then the real first fruit offering was resurrected. I can't tell you, when I found this out, I had chills for like 3 hours. I couldn't believe this incredible thing. That God had written this law. Well, let's go back. I love this. God had created the universe. And way, way out in the constellation of Virgo, in the second decan, which is called the Coma, or the desired one of the nations, which is what Coma means. And that is in the image of a woman sitting in a chair with a child in her lap. 65 million years ago, that the star in that nova, of that coma, in the head of the child, novaed, supernovaed. And it took jillions of years for that light to get here at the exact time that Christ was being conceived by the Holy Spirit on the eighth day of the Feast of Hanukkah. And that set the Magi off on their trip halfway across the known world so that they were there near the birth time of that which the star supernova 65 million years before. Now tell me God's not in control. Now he had written this law thousands of years beforehand, or 1,500 years beforehand, by the hand of Moses and the pattern that he showed him when he was in glory. And now the law concerning these set times of God that were very specific. It was arranged so that all of the movement of weather and everything else was exactly right, so that Christ had come to this place, so that the barley offering had come to this place, so that at exactly the same time that Christ was being taken from the cross. I mean, the whole thing just is so ooey ooey, you can't even. And while they were doing this, we know what psalms were being sung in the temple by the Levite chorus. And then tell me that God isn't in control. Tell me that you're supposed to lean on your own arm of understanding. You couldn't even conceive the plan of God. It's not even ability. That's why, except you become as that little child without self-awareness and just give yourself in total 100% dependence on God, you're just walking in rebellion, no matter what you call it. Now, you couldn't eat the food of the new land. Now, the new land is no longer that hunk of real estate in Israel. The new land is the promised land, the new Jerusalem that John saw descending. That now is our new reality. That is our only reality. That is our only land. And we can only eat the food of that new land. The food that has become the bread of affliction for the Jews is now the bread of life. The cross, which had been a shame, is now our tree of life. And we live in a totally different world that has absolutely nothing to do with the senses. It has to do with faith that every moment of your life, God is in control. And I can show you this picture over and over and over in every set time of the Lord. Every other day is just some invention of man. Well, that's the beginning of the study of the Count of the Omer.
This reminds me of Peter telling Christ, no, no.
You can't die.
What he's saying is, no, no, we won't cut down this offering. We won't make the first fruit offering. And Israel will start.
And this was typified previously. Again, besides being in Leviticus, it was typified in Joshua when they entered the land and they couldn't eat of the new fruit of the land. And if they couldn't, if the first fruit offering hadn't been accepted there on Passover season, then they wouldn't have had anything. They couldn't have eaten anything. They would have died. Well, I promise you, you will spiritually die unless you begin eating only the manna from heaven. Unless your sustenance and satisfaction comes only from Him. And that is the only thing that gives you, unless your only worth comes from the blood of the Lamb. And this is the meaning of Passover. And now, because the real first fruit offering had been accepted, we can eat of this new, the fruit of this new land. No longer trying to take the mystery of God and put it in our own understanding. There's probably no greater evil to God than that. I write unto you that know the law. It took me 12 years to dig this up. But I saw it the first day that I knew him, or he knew me. But for some reason, we've cut ourselves off from this mystery. Because now we have a new God of the new covenant. No, it's the same God. And it's the completed covenant. There's one covenant, but now it's finished. And it's not good news to modern man. It's the worst news possible. Because it requires your death to become a partaker of it. That you must see you were with him on that cross. If one died for all, then we're all dead. The first thing he said to his disciples was, abandon yourself. Take no thought about yourself in any dimension. Pick up your cross. Accept your death. And then you will follow me. Because it was ordained before the foundation of the world. If you can just get your idiotic minds out of the way. The instead of Christs who have deceived you constantly your entire life. Now, for the next... Now the counting of the Omer begins. And the plagues before Passover destroyed... And the cross destroyed... The bad. Now the counting of the Omer, the days between the Feast of Passover and the Feast of Pentecost, the counting of the Omer, the 50 days, is where you come out of the 49 gates of impurity. Now those 49 gates of impurity aren't what you think is bad. The 49 gates of impurity, every one of those 49 gates is something that you think is good. So you finally, at the end, on the Feast of Pentecost, you come before the Lord totally empty, as an empty vessel, without opinion, that he might fill the temple. Now we have to repeat this so many years, so often, because of our terrible rebellion, because of our own desire to be our own deity. Maybe this year is the year of your understanding that you can step out of the gates of impurity, finally. Step out of thinking about, trying to follow that which you think is good, instead of total dependence on a loving Father. Does the majesty of this strike any of you as it does me? Well, as usual, I've used up my time. It's because we were also on time this morning.
One of the little things that this does is these huge things that really matter are taken care of and planned several million years in advance, that I really don't have to worry about what I'm going to do at 10 o'clock this morning.
Dark, really.
But those are the things that drive me crazy, is those little meaningless things.
But they drive you crazy only because you give them breath. You give them importance.
This information is like, it has just a broad impact on, it causes emptiness, it causes repentance, just to hear it, because you can't stand against it. There's nothing in me that can come against that, that knowledge. So it just allows surrender.
Remember the least studied scripture in evangelical Christianity? Matthew 23:15. You shall travel over sea and land to make one convert, and when he is made, you'll make him twice the child of hell that you are. The only time a child of hell is ever defined in the scriptures is one who has eaten of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and judged thereby judging for themselves what is good and right and wrong, good and evil, instead of living in that childlike dependence on the Father. And that's the result of the curse. That's all men. But they're twice the child of hell, because now you take that guy that is already judging for himself good and evil, and now you put on him the weight of your own religious ideas of good and evil, and now you've made him twice the child of hell that you are. And that should scare some of you. Think on these things. What's going on, Ken? You look like you ate something.
Oh, I just... my whole motivation for life has been chasing after things that I think are going to...
benefit you.
Benefit me, make me feel better.
Consider the lilies of the field. They spin not, neither do they sow. But Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Consider the birds of the air. They just live. Don't you see? That's our heritage. To be instead of trying to be. Oh, but I'm trying to be, and I'm good at trying, and I did good. Well, that's fine for right now, but the truth's going to hit you like a ton of bricks pretty soon. Again, it's only the losers that can hear this. It's only the ones who are sick and tired. Because otherwise you will hear, just like everything else, it becomes a mirror of how you can use it. for me, for Watusi. Watusi is Korean for me.
If God can provide the timing 65 million years or whatever in advance for a star of the supernova, he's got the future pretty well. So the idea of worrying about something that's going to happen is...
Well, even trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just goofy.
Yeah.
It's just goofy.
Pumping energy.
You know, I'm going to pump this energy into it. Thanks, Ronnie. I forgot all about that. When I first met, I'll get to tell everybody. When I first met Buckner, he is a new believer, but he'd become a believer by following the Aquarian gospel. Yeah. And so everything that we did, we got to just keep pumping the energy into it. Yeah, right. Well, I've bought it a million times since the day that happened, but fortunately, he slapped me upside the head and I was able to repent. Yeah, it's right. Every time I did it, I got up. You know, God raised a picture of Gary right in front of me. I said, I don't want to be like Gary. Take it, big guy.
I need 5 minutes.